This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Tomorrow, 4:05, first pitch, first game of the year. The Nats open up in Cincinnati. Josiah Gray will be on the hill. Mark Zuckerman will be covering it all year long for, of course, Masson. You can follow Mark on Twitter, on X, at Mark Zuckerman, Zuckerman. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. So, last year this time, the expectation really was of an awful season. They had the lowest or second lowest with the Oakland A's win over under total before the season began. And they cleared it easily. It was like 59.5. They ended up winning 71 games. There's a little bit more expectation, the over under 66.5 this year. Will they exceed that? Are they better than people think?
I think so. I think the thing that everyone has to keep in mind, and it's why this season, to me, really has to be broken into two parts. There's the team that they're going to start the year with tomorrow, which has some talent, but still has a good number of these just sort of stopgaps, veterans they brought in on one-year deals, or a few guys who've been here for a while but don't really figure into the long-term plan. And then over the course of the season, they're going to start calling up these top prospects of theirs, who we saw in spring training. And so the team they're going to have at the end of the year, to me, is going to be a lot different and a lot better, hopefully, than the team they start the year with. And so I do think there is progress here. And I think, you know, it's hard to put a number on wins and losses necessarily. I'm officially going with 76. Maybe that's too optimistic, but I do think this is a team that at the end of the year, people are going to look at and say, okay, they're on track now. And we're not talking about the long-distance future anymore. We're talking about the immediate future because all the pieces are finally in place at the big league level.
So I think there is some excitement about those pieces. Speak to those pieces. As the season goes along, in order of significance, give me the players that you think end up by the end of the year making us feel like 2025 could be a contending season.
You know, it's funny because Dylan Cruz is the name around baseball and, you know, is the top-ranked prospect among them, given his track record at LSU, the fact he was the number two overall pick last year. But watching this spring, it really struck me that he still got a ways to go. And that's not a bad thing, you know. I mean, he just came out of college 9 months ago, and so it does take time. Not everybody bursts onto the scene like Juan Soto or Bryce Harper did. I do think we'll see him before the end of the season. But before we get to that point, I think James Wood, who really stood out this spring and had a good case to make the roster coming out of spring, he's just a notch below Cruz in terms of like how they're viewed around the sport. He is the complete package and a local kid who grew up in Montgomery County. I think we're going to see him pretty soon in the outfield. I also think we're going to see Trey Lipscomb, another local kid from Frederick, who almost made the opening day roster. Finally, they made the announcement yesterday that he wouldn't. But an infielder who I think is going to end up starting for them at second base or third base before long, maybe even the first one who comes up. So I'm looking at Lipscomb and Wood coming up early in the year, and Wood in particular having a big impact. And then later in the season, I think we will see Dylan Cruz. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be an outstanding player, but maybe not immediately the all-everything superstar that he might be hyped to be.
You know, I want to go back to the draft, and your memory of this is going to be much better than mine. But I remember the pitcher from LSU who was Cruz's teammate, Skeens, I think his name was, was the first pick, and Cruz was the second pick. If the Nats had the first pick in the draft was today, knowing what they know about Cruz and whatever we know about Skeens at this point, who would the pick be?
You know, I don't want this to come across as it's negative on Cruz, or, you know, I think they still very much believe in him. And, you know, he did great at the lower levels of the minors last year, and I think he just wore down by the time he got to Double A at the end. But I do think all along that if they had their choice, and this was all going to depend on what the Pirates did, I thought they would draft Skeens only because of the idea that an elite pitcher who throws over 100 consistently is such a hard thing to find in the sport nowadays. Especially to get him cheap on a rookie deal, you know. So I always felt like he would be the guy if they had the choice. But I don't think they were disappointed to get Cruz at all. The fascinating part of this is that the number four pick, Wyatt Langford from Florida, the Rangers picked him. He's on their opening day roster. And that's the defending World Series champ. And so
was
there
he
were
older?
People at the time.
Wasn't he
no,
older?
He,
like the...
Same age as Cruz
okay.
coming out of college. And so there were people that said, like, this guy, don't sleep on him. He might be better than all of them. Again, it's the beginning of all their career, so we don't judge
sure.
him yet. But it is kind of interesting to me that the World Series champs had a place for last year's top pick, and the Nationals did not, and the Pirates did not, although I think Skeens is going to be up within a matter of weeks for them.
Talking to Mark Zuckerman. So this is Davey Martinez's seventh season as the manager. First of all, I'm just curious where he ranks among the MLB managers in terms of tenure at this point.
He's getting up there. He is, I think, second in the NL East. Only Brian Snitker's ahead of him. But it is amazing when you think about the history here, where nobody previously lasted more than 2.5 seasons with
right.
the Nats. And here he is going into year seven. I looked this up today. Later on this season, he's going to have more games managed for the Nationals than the last three combined, Dusty Baker, Matt Williams, and Davey Johnson. I mean, think about that. It's pretty remarkable. And the fact that he's been given this opportunity, and you don't see this a lot, to take over a team that was trying to win. He did win in year two, won the whole thing. Then they tore it all down, and he's getting the opportunity now to see it through again. You don't often see that happen.
So why are we seeing that?
I think it's the timing of it all and the nature of it all in that they tore it down pretty quickly, and the GM and the manager were retained. And I think at this point, whatever you might think of Davey, once they decided to tear it down a couple years ago, I feel like you either had to tear it all down and replace the GM and the manager at that point, or if you're going to let them start this thing, then you got to let them see it through, at least give them the opportunity. And so that's why they both got extensions last year. It is a rare case. I mean, you don't see that necessarily. And if they do win again at some point here, make the playoffs again, that's pretty rare company for a GM and manager to win a World Series, tear it all down, start all over again, and then build it up again and actually win. That would be quite an achievement if they can pull it off.
I agree, and you have much more information on this historically than I do, but you don't do that just because. You do that because, as Mike Rizzo and ownership, they really believe in Davey Martinez as a manager. He must be
sure.
a good one.
Yeah, and I think they saw how he dealt with all the turmoil at the beginning there, the 1931 start, and how he kept them all together. And, you know, winning a World Series buys you a lot of goodwill. I mean, it's funny. If you really think about his tenure, 6 years here, only one of them would most people consider a success, and that's the one where they won it all. The previous year was a disappointment. Ever since then, they've finished in last place. But I think most view that as a reflection of the roster and not of the manager. And, you know, whatever you want to say about the guy, you have to acknowledge that he motivates his players. That no matter what the talent gap may be, they play hard all the way through to the last out. The boys battle, as we joke about, but there's something to it. Players love playing for him. He has a positive, upbeat mindset. And you know, I think it's also impressive that he can have that style both with a team full of star players like they had a few years ago and now a team full of young guys. You know, a lot of times you'd say, oh, you want a different style of manager, but I think his style fits and he's been able to adapt to the new group that he's with now.
But if Josh Hader gets one more out, he's probably not the manager right now.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, it's true. It's true.
We're talking to Mark Zuckerman. So Josiah Gray is going to be the opening day starter tomorrow in Cincinnati. Help me with this, because I was talking to Tommy about this the other day on the podcast, that it's either been Scherzer, Strasburg, or Corbin basically for like over a decade, right? Or did I miss somebody in there?
No, you're right. The last opening day starter that wasn't one of those big three was Levon Hernandez in 2011. That's how far back we're going. And so this is a legitimate passing of the torch now to the next generation. And it was frustrating for everyone to see Corbin take the mound the last couple of years. That was by default. It's just none of the young guys were proven yet. And he was still at least close enough removed from being good for them and winning the World Series that you felt like he had to sort of ceremoniously take that honor. But they're past that point now. I think Josiah Gray earned the right to do this. And I think there's also symbolism in Mackenzie Gore starting Monday's home opener against the Pirates. They could have set it up where Corbin was that guy. And instead, Davey wanted Gore to be that guy to say, we are turning the page. These are the two who we hope are going to lead us into the future, along with Cade Cavalli when he comes back from his injury. And I think it's just a further distancing of themselves from the past and understanding that the group that's going to win again here is already here in a lot of cases. They're not all here yet, but they're starting that process and they don't have to rely on past performance anymore. They can look ahead to the future.
So let's talk about the rotation. After it's Gray and Gore who you really rely on here, right? And then after that, is it just a huge question mark?
Yes and no. I mean, Corbin's going to start the second game. He's finally in the last year of his contract. I think we all know what he is at this point. There's no illusions that he's going to suddenly turn back into his former self. Jake Irvin, who doesn't get a lot of attention, he was a rookie last year who wasn't supposed to pitch as much as he did, and he wound up making 24 starts for them. He had a great spring. He's going to start the third game Sunday in Cincinnati, and I'm really interested to see how this year goes for him, if he can continue that and actually be a part of this going forward. Then Gore's the fourth, and then Trevor Williams, who was awful last year, he's the fifth starter by default, but I keep telling everyone that's a temporary position, I think. Cade Cavalli, who was their top pitching prospect until he tore his elbow last year, he's expected to be back in June. He's going to be in the rotation when he's healthy. And Jackson Rutledge, who was a first-round pick for them in 2019, finally made his debut last September. He's at AAA, but I don't expect him to be there long. I think he'll be the first one called up. So likewise, when I said they do still have a few of these placeholders, Corbin and Williams are the placeholders. Corbin will be here because of the contract. Williams could get moved to the bullpen sooner rather than later, and I think we'll see more of these young kids as the season plays out.
All right. Tell me what you think right now going into this season is the absolute strength of the team, and then what's the biggest concern area?
I think the strength is the bullpen, which is something we maybe haven't said here in a long, long time. Even during the good years, that was always a huge question mark. But they have legit depth there. Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, Tanner Rainey's back from his injury. They signed several veteran relievers who have like actual big league closing experience. Dylan Floro, Matt Barnes, Derek Law. There's real depth there. They had to cut guys at the end of the camp who any other year would have been locked to make the team, and they just didn't have room for them. So I know bullpens are fickle year to year. You never really know what you're going to get, but I think there's enough depth there to make me think that's going to be a strength for them. The weakness is, I think, the same thing that was last year, and that's a lack of power in their lineup. Now, they signed Joey Gallo, big-time home run hitter. He also strikes out a ton.
Right.
And has a career batting average under 200. So it's all or nothing with him. He had a bad spring. You hope that he gets hot at some point and goes on like one of those Kyle Schwarber-like home run tears. But beyond him, it's Lane Thomas, who did well for them last year. Joey Meneses, who's a good solid hitter but didn't hit for a whole lot of power. And then you're waiting for the kids to come up. Wood and Cruz are going to be power hitters whenever they get here, but that may not happen right away. So I do think this is a lineup that's still going to struggle to score runs, certainly to score runs in bunches. They're going to have to manufacture them. And I just don't know that they have the ability to do that and, you know, score consistently 5-6 runs a night. They're going to need the pitching to be outstanding, I think, to make up for the lack of offense.
Do they have a player right now in their everyday lineup, and I would point to C.J. Abrams for starters, that has a chance to have an all-star caliber year?
Yeah, I think C.J. is number one on that list, and it got overlooked a little bit because he struggled the first half last year. When they moved him to the leadoff spot in July, the rest of the year was phenomenal for him. I mean, he wound up breaking Trey Turner's club stolen base record for the season with 47, and something like 35 of them came after the All-Star break. So he gets on, he can do big things, and he hit 18 homers on top of that. So this is a guy who can be easily a 20-20 player, if not 25 homers. I would put him high on the list. I think Lane Thomas gets overlooked, but I mean, he hit 28 homers last year, led the National League in outfield assists, just a good, solid, all-around player who's not going to be the star of the team, but I think could be really good. And I thought I had a case for the All-Star team last year. So those are the two. Keibert Ruiz, you hope he puts it all together. There were glimpses of it. He was a really good clutch hitter, runners in scoring position last year, didn't hit for a ton of power, and really struggled defensively behind the plate, which is something they want to see improvement on because they've committed to him. He's the guy they've locked up already for 8 years. They need to know that he is going to be their catcher long term, not just as a good hitting catcher, but as a good defensive catcher as well.
The division's a problem, right? It's certainly top heavy with Atlanta and Philadelphia, but even the other two teams, I think, pretty much have higher over and under numbers in terms of expected wins this year. I mean, are the Nats staring a last place finish, even if they're significantly improved?
You know, I've actually got them in fourth ahead of the Marlins, who I know they made the playoffs last year, got the 84 wins, but they've had a ton of injuries to their pitching rotation. And didn't do a whole lot this winter in terms of adding other pieces. So, I mean, they're always still kind of the Marlins in my mind where you got to prove it to me that you are more than just a team hoping the young guys come together, and they aren't that yet. So I do think the Nats could finish ahead of them, you know, not guaranteed. And the Mets, you know, they went all in the last couple of years, blew up in their faces. They traded away Scherzer and Verlander, and they didn't do a whole lot this winter. Now, they still have some good players, and they're paying a lot of money to guys. And I know that Steve Cohen, their owner, is envisioning, if not this year, by next year, trying to go back all in again, maybe signing Juan Soto. But for the moment, I don't know what they're going to be. So, I mean, if there's a dream scenario out there for the Nats, maybe you could finish in third ahead of the Mets if those guys do fall apart again and aren't investing in the future quite yet. But probably in the fourth to fifth range. And, you know, it's really about taking that step up this year, having the young guys debut and look like they're legit, and then – I think a year from now, it's a different story, especially if ownership is willing to start spending on free agent skin.
Yeah, which they obviously weren't willing to do this offseason. So that's where I'll finish up. Actually, two quick ones to finish up. Number one, so what's the deal with Steven Strasburg right now? Like, he's never going to pitch again. I think we understand that. But with respect to actual retirement.
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, he's not going to pitch again. He knows it. They know it. They all acknowledge it. But they cannot agree on the financial terms of that. And he's under contract for 3 more years, making over $100 million. It's a guaranteed contract, but there, you know, are ways in there that I guess parts of ownership, and I want to be careful when I say this, it's not all of ownership, my understanding. It's parts of ownership believes that he should at least defer some of that money or renegotiate some of the terms of it. And Steven and Scott Boras have said no.
I think they should say no. This is always, by the way, at the time, the deal was considered to be a pretty good deal for the team, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a 7-year extension for a pitcher already in his 30s, so there was always the risk of injury, but they could have taken out insurance on it, and they chose not to. It would have been very cost prohibitive, but in the end, it probably would have helped them out, and maybe they wouldn't be in this position. So it's this game of chicken. They're kind of staring at each other and nobody willing to budge. And so what's going to happen is they'll, I believe tomorrow, officially put him on the 60-day IL again. He'll spend the whole year on that. When next offseason comes, they're going to have to put him back on the 40-man roster and use up a spot. We're going to go through this dance again for 3 years until it's over, unless they can come to some kind of agreement here on how to do this. The shame of it is, you know, they wanted him to come to spring training. They want him to be a part of the organization and help the young guys. And my understanding is he has no interest in doing anything for them at the moment, not under the current structure and the current situation.
Well, does he have any sort of requirement, you know, per the contract on the 60-day IL? Does he have to be around the team? Does he have to report for rehab? Like, what is his, you know, bare minimum requirement so that he's not, you know, in violation of the contract?
Right, and that's what I was wondering, if it was going to come to that this spring, when Mike Rizzo said we expect him to report on the day that was the designated, you know, required report date for everyone in baseball. That day came and went, and nothing happened, and everything that I've asked since has suggested that they're not going to try to take that step and say that he's somehow in violation of the contract. You're opening up a whole can of worms if you do that, and you're going in for a major fight over that if it does come to that. You know, I think because there is this acknowledgement that he can't really rehab in an attempt to pitch again, and I think they all understand that, so I don't know there's a whole lot of recourse for them. But if they want to go that route, they are, you know, it's World War III if that happens, and now who knows what the result of all that would be.
At some point, I mean, for a guy that pitched one of the all-time great postseason games, Game 6 of the World Series, which got the Lerners and Ted Lerner what he desired when he bought the team back, you know, in 2005. At what point, where's the juice that's worth this petty squeeze? It seems petty to me, and I think it could be, I don't want to say penny wise, pound foolish, because it's not penny wise, it's millions of dollars, but like, it's just the reputation that they're going to take a major hit on with players around the league and agents around the league, I would think.
Yeah, no, you're not alone in that line of thinking. And just beyond any of that, like, you have this iconic franchise player who spent his whole career here. Others who left, he stayed, won you know, the World Series, and lives in the area and continues and wants to remain here as his home in retirement. So you have to have a relationship with him. He needs to be, I know he's not the most public figure to begin with, but
right.
You want to believe that he'd come to the park every once in a while and do something. They're going to, in late April, the Astros come to town. They're going to have a 5-year World Series celebration for that series. And I'm told a bunch of players from the 2019 team are coming back. I don't know how Steven is going to show up to that under the current situation. And how can you have a celebration of this team that won the World Series and not have the guy who was the MVP, especially when he lives in town, but he's in disagreement with the team and probably isn't going to want to throw them any bones by showing up for that? It's sad. It should never have come to that. Unfortunately, this is where we are now.
I have a feeling a lot of ownership groups would have handled this much differently, and that would be really unfortunate if he's not there. He's one of the great clutch performers in the history of this city. You know, you put him up there with Rigo in terms of postseason totally, you know, delivering in the biggest moments, which he did over and over again. And it wasn't his fault that he got injured, and it wasn't his fault that they gave him that contract, you know, with him being in his 30s, with the prospect of or the increased possibility of an injury. Ridiculous, really, and unfortunate. But we'll see what happens. By the way, I know I've asked you this before, but is he a Hall of Famer or not? He's not, right?
No, there was that point after the 2019 World Series that I thought, okay, if he could do this for a few more years, he's going to have a good case for himself. And unfortunately, the bottom fell out, and you know, he's only made 8 starts since then. So, no, he'll go down as one of the great clutch performers ever, and you know, the most hyped pitching prospect ever. But I don't think there's enough breadth of performance for him to have the case for it.
Great to catch up. Hope you're well. Enjoy the start of the season. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Kevin.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerman, everybody. Not only does he write for Mass and Sports at massandsports.com, he's got a Nats Chat podcast with our good friend Al Galdi. You can get that anywhere you get a podcast, and you can follow him on X on Twitter at Mark Zuckerman. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Jaden Daniels' pro day is underway in Baton Rouge. Just over 6'3", 6'3 and change. I don't have the official height measured in at. And 210. Which is a good weight for him, considering what some of the people were concerned about. He will not throw until a little bit later on this afternoon. Keep it here all day. We'll keep you posted on Jaden Daniels' pro day. And then you've got Drake Mays coming up at the end of the week. I just saw that, you know, Albert Breer tweeted out, Daniels came in at 6'3 and change. And 210 pounds. By the way, Malik Nabers ran a 4.34 40, which is pretty impressive as well. But I'm wondering what 6'3 and change means. Is that 6'3 and an eighth? 6'3 and a quarter? It's certainly not more than 6'3 and a half or 6'3 and a half. But it's plenty tall enough to play quarterback in the NFL by at least a couple of inches. Big day for Washington down there, as we talked about at the beginning of the show. Big day for Jaden Daniels. I think for me, it's all about what he looks like physically, and coming in at 210 is positive for him. I think one of the reasons he refused to be weighed in at the combine is maybe he wasn't 210 at the combine and wanted to get to 210. He does look slight. It's the thing that's the most obvious thing physically about him when you watch him play football, is that he looks like he needs a meal or three. And, you know, at the same time, he's impossible to catch, impossible to bring down unless he lets you bring him down. But still, you know, 205, something north of 205 is like a magic number to a certain degree for NFL evaluators. There is this long-running history of quarterbacks that have weighed in at less than 205 not having any success and starting very few games this century. So something above 205, I think, was important for him. And him looking the part when he throws with his height, with his size in the pocket, up close and personal, will be big for him. Washington is one of the several teams that will end up meeting with him today. The list of teams, I had it here a second ago, that will be meeting with him. The Patriots, Commanders, Giants, Vikings, Broncos, and Raiders all have scheduled meetings with him today following his pro day, per his agent. And it does say, Ian Rappaport tweeted out, Daniels has not previously met with teams. He didn't meet with teams for that 15-minute window at the combine, Denton?
That is the first we have heard any of that. I was under the assumption that he had met with teams. Because didn't he talk about meeting with the Commanders?
Rappaport tweeted out within the hour, immediately following his pro day, LSU quarterback and potential top three pick Jaden Daniels is scheduled to meet with the Patriots, Commanders, Giants, Vikings, Broncos, and Raiders, per his agent Ron Butler. Daniels has not previously met with any teams. I thought they had a chance to sit and meet with him at the combine. I thought he was one of the 15-minute meetings where Josh Harris was an observer in the back of the room.
I thought he – I'm trying to look because I thought we had audio of him saying that he met with the team.
Audio of Jaden Daniels? Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
So this
we
is,
did.
This is
we had audio of him and J.J. McCarthy talking
right,
about meeting
Drake
with the
May.
Team.
Yeah,
and Drake May.
Hold on. Let me pull it up. I actually have it right here. Give me a second.
Yeah, there's no way he didn't take 15 minutes to meet with the team at the combine. Maybe Rappaport's talking about a more substantial meeting, like, although those top 30s don't start until the top 30s start when? I don't know. Maybe he's referring to that at this point.
I have the
It'll be a more substantial meeting. Go ahead. Do you have the sound?
Yeah, here it is.
It was just how cool the whole staff was. Obviously, Dan Quinn, Cliff Kingsbury, all those type of guys. I just be able to sit in there and really just get to know people. You see them on TV, see everybody coaching behind the scenes. So be able to go in there and just have a conversation with them. That's the coolest part for me.
Yeah. All right. So Rappaport had that wrong, unless he was specifically referring to a more significant one-on-one meeting. So they'll spend time with him like they did last week with J.J. McCarthy, like they did last week with Caleb Williams, and like they will again later this week with Drake May. And I would certainly imagine that while we've had some reporting or something approximating reporting with what Washington, you know, as to what Washington will do at number two, I think we'll have more of that after these pro days are complete. But again, Washington's been outstanding at keeping a lid on everything. This was an emphasis, no doubt, with Josh Harris and ownership, Mitch Rales, etc. They were witness as fans. Certainly, Mitch Rales, maybe even more so than Josh Harris, because Mitch Rales lives here. But witness to what this was for so long, which was, you know, at every turn, at every moment where a competitive advantage could have been gained, the actual franchise took the opposite tact and turned something into a competitive disadvantage. It's not the way this group will be. If something gets leaked, it'll be strategic with these guys. And so maybe we should think about that, too, with whatever reports come out post this pro day. It would be nice to once again root for a team that A, wins big, and B, is one of those teams where all of the reporters around the league consistently say, you know what, with Washington, you just never know. They are a buttoned-up organization. Because long before the era of social media and blogs and podcasts, Washington, before Snyder owned the team, was one of those teams. People never knew what Bobby Bethard was thinking or Charlie Casserly was thinking. You found out after it happened. And that's a good position for, you know, the organization to be in. Let's see if they can stick with it. I will say this. Dan Quinn, he does like himself a microphone. There's no doubt about that. But he's not giving out state secrets. That's for sure. So I wanted to switch real quickly to another team in the division, the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, I think most of you know they've been totally inactive during free agency. Didn't really add anything. This is a team that got blown out in part, mostly because of their defense in their playoff game against Green Bay. A defense, yes, we all know, coached by Dan Quinn. Dak Prescott is entering his final year on his current contract. And right now, the word is it doesn't appear as if they're going to work to extend that before the season begins. There was some discussion about that earlier today. I'm going to play it for you when we come back. The Cowboys may be in a win it all or see a Dak and Mike McCarthy situation. That and more when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Massive win for the Caps in their playoff chances last night. 4-3 in overtime over the Detroit Red Wings. The Caps now have a 2-point advantage over Detroit for the final wild card spot in the East. The Caps now trail Philly by 1 point for the final spot in the Metropolitan. Two different avenues for the Caps to get into the postseason. They're off today. They're on the road against Toronto tomorrow. Wizards in action tonight. They got Brooklyn. Tip at 7. You can hear it right here on the team at 980. According to the Kentucky Athletic Director, Coach Cal isn't going anywhere. The school is going to bring him back for another season following a disappointing run in this year's NCAA tournament. And Ice Cube revealed that the Big Three made a $5 million offer to Caitlin Clark for her to join the league. No word on whether or not she has accepted that offer. And that's what's trending.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, unless the Cowboys get to the NFC Championship game and play well, this is the last year for Mike McCarthy in Dallas and certainly the last year for Dak Prescott as a Dallas Cowboy. I'll paint a very clear picture. Unless that happens, Greeny, because this is what the reality for the Cowboys is. Dak Prescott is going to play well again this season, okay? And what happens is when he plays well, one of two things. The Cowboys are either going to have to pay him $65-plus million a year and still not have a championship to show for it, or he walks and they get absolutely nothing for him. That's why the day after the season, when they got waxed by Green Bay, I was like, I'd start all over again. Everyone was like, you're a hater, this and that. No, I'm not. This is just the reality of where the Cowboys are. And unless they go to the NFC title and play well, there'll be a new start in Dallas.
Dan Orlovsky from Mike Greenberg's Get Up show this morning on ESPN. So starting all over prior to this year would have required, by the way, just from a contractual standpoint, Dak Prescott to waive a no-trade clause, which he has. He has a no-franchise tag and a no-trade clause in the current deal that he signed back in 2021. This is an interesting situation, man, because the Cowboys have boxed themselves in. Jerry Jones is essentially betting that if Dak Prescott plays well, Mike McCarthy coaches the team well. The addition of Mike Zimmer as a defensive coordinator coaches up the defense the way Quinn had coached it up, minus the playoff game, well. That they make a legitimate Super Bowl run and Dak chooses to stay and they work out a long-term deal with Dak after the upcoming 2024 season. But what sparked this conversation was a report from Ian Rappaport and comments from Jerry Jones that the Cowboys and Dak Prescott have a mutual understanding of his contract situation. And as Jerry Jones said, we are where we are and we are locked and loaded for this year, meaning there is no new deal coming. There was an expectation, certainly during the year, that during this offseason, before he got to the final year of his deal in 2024, that they would extend him, especially with the increase, the unexpected increase in the salary cap this year. There will be another big bump in the salary cap next year. But it certainly appears as if the Cowboys like Dak, but they don't love him. And on some level, I get it with Dak Prescott. It's hard to find a lot of guys that are better. He is in that top, 10 to, top 8 to top 12 conversation. It's kind of the same conversation we've had about Kirk Cousins for many years. He's not an elite quarterback. He's not a strap the team to your back quarterback. And he hasn't done enough when it's mattered the most. But if you move on without him, it's really hard to replace him. And you can do and you can go in a lot of places you haven't been for a long time. You know, Washington, since he left and after they had a modicum of success, certainly for this organization, winning a division and then going a game over 500 and missing the postseason in that second year of starting, they are 27 games under 500 and they've started 12 different quarterbacks since he left. The Cowboys unlike Cousins in 2017, where Washington could have traded him and had a major suitor with lots of high draft choices in San Francisco, but chose not to, the Cowboys can't trade him. First of all, it would be a salary cap crippling hit because they have a big deal and big cap numbers with him off of the extension they gave him in 2021. Secondly, he's got a no-trade clause. Dak Prescott, Mike McCarthy, Orlovsky nailed it, and Jerry is fine with it, and the organization is fine with it. What's interesting is if they do move on from Dak, and let's just say they have another 11-win season, but get 12-win season, but get blasted in the playoffs. You know, this is a team that hasn't had much playoff success since they last won it in '95. You know, this was a team in since '95 that has just five total playoff wins, no trips to the NFC Championship game. If they were to move on without him, the Cowboys would have, because of the way they structured his deal, a dead cap number for 2025 that would be the second biggest in NFL history next to Russell Wilson's this year in Denver. I also wonder, what would Dak's market be like if he hits free agency after another good season? Because he had a good season. He had a career season in 2023. Best completion percentage ever, best passer rating number ever, led the NFL in passing touchdowns with 36, finished second in QBR at 72.7, was third in passing yards. All right, he had an excellent season, and he's turning 31. How big of a market will there be for Dak if he hits free agency? I think the answer is big enough. There will be a handful of teams that will need a quarterback that can be at that level and win double-digit games or potentially win double-digit games, and they don't have many other options because they're not picking high enough in the draft or there aren't any other big-name free agents on the market. Who are the free agent quarterbacks next year? I didn't even look at that. Because, you know, Cousins clearly benefited from, A, having a great season before his injury, but B, there not being a lot to choose from. The NFL 2025 right now, the 2025 quarterbacks could be and could include Jared Goff, could include, yeah, that would be the big one, the other big one. I guess Tua could be a free agent next year. Jordan Love, they're going to extend in Green Bay, not really concerned about that, but it would be Jared Goff. I would certainly expect the Lions to figure out an extension for Jared Goff. You know, the Giants also, John Mara gave their front office permission to pursue quarterbacks in this draft, even if it means a trade up. Daniel Jones, the injuries, the uncertainty a year after giving him that big deal, they're looking for an answer. Dak would have a market. With the cap going up to where it is, he'd get a bigger deal than Cousins got this year, in part because he's 4 years younger than Cousins. And so you would have, you know, Cousins got $100 million for essentially 3 years, $90 million guaranteed. He'd be looking at something maybe close to 50% higher than that, I would think, in guaranteed money. I mean, I think he could be looking at a deal that pays him 130 to 150 guaranteed with somebody next year. Dallas taking a big risk, though. Like, where do they go? What if they win 11 games, 12 games, and get zapped again early in the postseason? They won't have a great draft choice. They don't have anybody on their current roster. They won't be in a great cap position next year either because of his cap hit. They have boxed themselves in by deciding not to negotiate and not to try to extend Dak Prescott now. It's a tough position to be in, man. We've talked about this with a lot of the quarterbacks that are like Dak. It's like you're not sure he's the guy to get you over the hump, even though that playoff loss was more about the defense for Dallas than it was Dak Prescott. But at the same time, you could be out in, quarterback purgatory for many years to come, winning 6 or 7 games a year instead of the 11, 12, 13 they've been winning.
So we should root for that to happen then. Let them get 11 wins, get zapped in the playoffs, and then be in hell for a little bit.
It's interesting. I thought that they would extend him in this offseason, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought so. But also, I don't know if I can blame him. That's a lot of money to throw to a guy that hasn't resulted in any sort of real playoff success outside of one victory against a team that had quit because Tom Brady was ready to go.
I understand that. But good luck trying to do a lot better. It's hard. This position, there aren't many that can do it at a top 8 to top 12 consistent level. The problem with 8 to 12 is they are still super costly, and it's hard then to build around them, and they're not the kind of guys that you can strap a season to and say, we are okay on the offensive line, we're okay on defense, you got to rise above this and win it all for us. All right, we are done for the day. Continue to keep it here. Chris and Linnell are up next. Jaden Daniels Pro Day going on down in Baton Rouge. He's set to throw in the coming hour. Kevin Sheehan Show done for the day. Back tomorrow. We'll preview the Sweet 16.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.